I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about an Indiana cultural landmark, the Heartland Film Festival. We're going to talk about the movies Hoosiers can see at the festival and about the factors that have made Heartland such a success. My guests will be Heartland Artistic Director Tim Irwin and Director Paul Lazarus, whose film Slingshot, about Segway inventor Dean Kamen's life-saving water filtration invention, is being shown as part of this year's festival. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about an Indiana cultural landmark, the Heartland Film Festival, which is currently underway. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, my guests are a veteran of the program, Heartland Artistic Director Tim Irwin. Tim, welcome back.
Thank you very much, John.
It's good to have you here. And Director Paul Lazarus, whose film Slingshot, about Segway inventor Dean Kamen's life-saving water filtration invention, that's the second time I've bottled that, is being shown as part of this year's festival. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Certainly. Well, Tim, I'm going to start. Can you give us an overview of what's going on at Heartland this year?
A lot's going on. We have 135 films from all over the world that we've been highlighting here in Indianapolis the past several days. We got launched last Thursday and go through this Saturday, which is actually Paul's birthday, I believe. So
happy early birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
So we have two screening locations, two primary ones, and then we actually, at the AMC Castleton Theater on the northeast side and then at the AMC Traders Point on the northwest side. We've actually expanded our programming down at the Wheeler Arts Community in Fountain Square, right where our office is this year. Have two showings a night there through today, and then three showings each night there tomorrow and Saturday. So, yeah, lots going on, lots of different films. We're expecting over 150 filmmakers in attendance throughout the festival, which is awesome. Just gives audiences a chance to go deeper into the films that they've just enjoyed.
Well, and you got a lot of attention, obviously. One of the films, The Judge, you managed to get. Robert had just a mild media typhoon when Robert Downey Jr. came into town.
Just a little bit, yeah. We had a special kickoff event October 4th. Had the judge in town from Warner Brothers Pictures. We knew the director was going to be in, and we're kind of keeping our fingers crossed. And all of a sudden, Robert Downey Jr. shows up as well. And it was, launched us off pretty epically this year.
Okay. Paul, tell me a little bit, what does it mean to come to Heartland? Is this your first time here, or is this, have you been?
It's my first time at the festival. I actually participated in the New Harmony Project, which was also begun by Jeff Sparks, and I think that's an accurate way to call it. And so I've been to Indiana, and I've always enjoyed it, and I did a play here a long time ago at the New Harmony Project. But this is my first time at the festival.
Oh, what was the play?
The play was by Mark St. Germain. It was a musical called Johnny Pie and the Fool Killer and went on to tremendous success, actually.
Oh. Well, welcome back to the state.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about your movie.
Slingshot is about the inventor Dean Kamen, and who most people know, as you said, because he invented the Segway, the scooter device that's self-balancing. But in this case, he's invented a box, a technology called the Slingshot, which refers to David and Goliath. Mm-hmm. His idea is that the Davids of the world are going to take down this big problem of water, this giant Goliath of water, by using this slingshot technology. It basically is a water purification technology that can take any form of water, whatever contamination is in it, and turn it into clean water through this highly efficient cycling energy process that he's created. So it needs very little power, the power of a handheld hairdryer. And it's a point-of-use solution to a very big problem. It's a way of putting a machine right in a small, impoverished village and getting 100 people adequate clean water for cooking, cleaning, and washing. It's kind of a miracle. And about 8 years ago, I started this. And our ideas were just trying to help get the story out there on this box, this technology, and help get it out there. But the other thing is Dean himself is extremely – he's funny. He's provocative, and he's a character. So what it allowed me to do as a filmmaker was to make a very – I hope, entertaining film about a very dire crisis. So I like to think that it's a movie about a solution, not a problem.
Well, and it sounds like it's also not one of those eat your vegetables documentaries.
No, we are serving a lot of dessert, I hope.
Okay. Well, how did you find out about the story? I mean, what drew you to it in the first place?
I've been working with Dean for about 20 years, and I've done countless short documentaries with him about his first robotics program for high school kids, an amazing program that's very active out here, by the way, in Indiana and Indianapolis. But it's a program where kids get engaged with professional engineer mentors and build robots and compete in this amazing game. But I'd made a lot of short projects about that, and I'd made projects about his then Ginger, which became the Segway. Mm-hmm. Ginger was the companion to the Fred Upstairs iBot robot. Dean likes funny names. So his wheelchair was called Fred Upstairs because it went upstairs, and his other device, which we now know as the Segway, was called Ginger after Ginger Rogers. So, but after doing all of these short projects, he told me in about 2006 what he was working on. And I just thought, this is the biggest thing you'll ever do. And water affects, you know, billions of people and is a crisis that's going to be one of the biggest challenges we face in our lifetime. I thought, what if I could turn a camera on the story now and trace what it's like to go from an idea in his head to reality? Could I tell that story? Usually technology stories are at the end when everything is finished. So I wanted to see if we could capture it as it was happening, and luckily he agreed.
Was it difficult? I mean, obviously, you say you've been working with him for 20 years. There's a relationship. Do you consider him a friend?
Yeah, I think so. But you know, as a filmmaker, you know, friend goes out the window. You have to.
Where I was going with the question. Actually, is does that make it harder or easier?
Make it harder.
Yeah.
There's an expectation when a friend's in a room. We had to kind of forget about friends and do director, filmmaker, and subject because I really wanted this to be as truthful and as investigative as possible, as did he, frankly. And luckily, we were able to kind of Dean is a very interesting, eccentric genius. You know, friends is – it's difficult to describe.
What a concept.
You know, I mean, this is a man trying to save the world. It's not – you know, he doesn't have a lot of friends, but I'm definitely a colleague and have been in his life for a long time. So there's trust, and trust begets access, and access in a movie like this is everything.
Well, I'm curious about this, so I'm going to continue this, even though I probably ought to be asking Tim questions like where can people see the movie and all of that.
But we'll get
to it, I promise. But in terms of – I can understand why you would do the film because it sounds like it's a fascinating story. What did he expect to get out of it?
Well, we talked about that up front, but I was hoping that the story would become truth. You know, that's what happens sometimes. Uh-huh. And the idea that – this technology is a very well-kept secret up to now, and a film is one way to get the word out, and not the only way, but it is a way. And we're discovering that our goals. We had three goals: help get this technology out in the world, help spread the excitement about science and technology that Dean came and both embodies and is trying to achieve, and then thirdly. Maybe the most insidious one is we have these attitudes about water, particularly North Americans. We go to our taps, we turn them on, we wash our cars, we water our golf courses. We don't think much about water. And I wanted to do a movie that possibly adjusted attitudes about water. And Dean was on board for all of that. And we talked all along the way. And, you know, when you make a movie, you don't know where you're going. Especially a documentary. Mm-hmm. So in 2006, 2007, we were just making this movie. There wasn't really a lot of understanding of what it was going to be. So we were just in it together and doing it. I don't think you know the outcome of a documentary. You just get doing it, and then it starts to teach you. So I guess having done all these projects with him, there was a trust that we jumped into the fray and just did it.
We are talking about the Heartland Film Festival here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, now that it sounds like a fascinating film, Tim, where can people see it?
Yeah, it's actually got a showing tonight at the AMC Traders Point Theater, 6:15. We're actually going to have Paul will be there to do an introduction and a Q&A afterwards, and then actually some of the robotics clubs are going to be there with just a static display. We're really excited that they can be involved, and they said we have two options. We can have a table with 3 feet of space by the side for a robot to stand, or you can give us half of the theater lobby and they can run around and do stuff, but you know, people can't come close. And I thought, whoa, okay, that sounds amazing. Maybe later, maybe after the festival's over.
Sounds like a lawyer's full employment act.
It's a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Yeah.
So we might try to do something with that, you know, after the festival for a special screening. But right now they'll be there, and the film will be there, and Paul will be there, and that'll be great. And then it shows one more time on Saturday at 3:00 again at Traders Point.
And where has it shown before, Paul? Is it?
It's been all over since March. Been in many, many festivals. Started in Cinequest in San Jose, and been in places. I just came back from Boston and New Hampshire, where it was shown. And but this is really our first time in sort of. This is not really the middle of the country, but in many respects, I think of Heartland as being a wonderful festival that speaks to this middle area of the entire country. And
the Corn Belt.
Yeah, I was really excited for the film to be here.
We are talking about the Heartland Film Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. What has the response been so far, Paul? I mean, does it open people's eyes when they see the movie?
Yeah, I think so. It's hard for me to speak to that, but as the guy getting up and answering questions after each screening, I can tell you that people are very inspired and engaged by the film, and which is very gratifying for me after having put so many years into it. But the thing that knocks me out, and I did not expect, is all of the parents that come up to me and say, "I wish that my child was here, and how do I show this in my son's high school or my daughter's junior high school?" And that is very meaningful to me because I think it's the hopefulness of saying that we, as human beings, we possibly have the ability to make changes in what we've done to the world, and mostly through science and technology. And the idea that parents want their kids to experience this is very, very complimentary to me. And it bespeaks a reaction that is not about numbing. A lot of documentaries you go to, and I'm sure Tim might speak to this, effectively scare you or numb you or teach you, one of my editors called it learned hopelessness.
Yeah.
And we really didn't want to do that. We wanted the audience to be energized, engaged, and hopeful about the future and want to do something. And that was a goal, a conscious goal.
Well, and it's interesting that you're saying that because as you were talking, I was thinking, okay, this almost sounds like the counterbalance to, you know, every other young adult fiction franchise right now is about some sort of disastrous dystopian society where, you know, young people have to literally be worried about being killed by their elders. In some ways, you're talking about a way to, you know, to figure out ways out of the morass rather than submitting to it.
I have an 8-year-old daughter, and it teaches me a lot of things. It teaches me where we disconnect from hope, and it teaches me about hope in general. And I think that lots and lots of people now want to think that there's a way to change this, because without that, how do you begin to change it? There's so much a wave of information. Look at the news today, Ottawa, and there's so much information about how screwed up we are. And I have gone to a lot of films in my life and have walked out. I call it the bag of nickels effect.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like somebody's beaten me over with a bag of nickels. I didn't want to do that. And I think that information and entertainment has a responsibility to not necessarily downgrade your experience, but uplift you. And I mean, I think that, and we've operated under the cliche that entertainment or diversion or important movies are hopeless. Mm-hmm. And I think it's I think it's as big a cliche as Pollyanna.
We are talking about the Heartland Film Festival here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Heartland Artistic Director Tim Irwin and Director Paul Lazarus, whose film Slingshot, which is about the Segway inventor Dean Kamen's life-saving water filtration invention, is part of this year's festival. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Heartland Film Festival. My guests are Heartland Artistic Director Tim Irwin and Director Paul Lazarus, whose film Slingshot is being shown as part of this year's festival. Well, Tim, give me an idea of some of the films that people can see at the festival, or could have. I guess we're nearing the end of it.
We're nearing the end, but there's still a good 3 days left, including today. We have such a wide variety of films this year. It's really exciting to see. The whole theme of the festival is shift your perspective, and that's something that Paul's film does very well, as we discussed, shifting people's ideas on water and hopefully uplifting them and giving them hope that there is something to do about that. So we have films that hit that tagline in a wide variety of ways. There's a film called A Thousand Times Goodnight that we're showing tonight, starring a French Oscar winner, Juliette Binoche, mm-hmm. and some guy from Game of Thrones, apparently. I'm not too aware of that show, but yeah, it's a popular one. The screening tonight sold out.
A lot of fans are going to let you know about that
I'm sure they will. I don't have time for television. I have to watch movies for my job. So we've actually slotted that film in A Thousand Times Goodnight in a couple of our TBA slots that we've held back. So one of those is tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. at Traders Point, and then again Saturday afternoon at 2:45, and that's a narrative feature film that's really about Juliette Binoche plays a photojournalist in war and how she has to go back to her family after putting herself in some really dangerous situations and how her family responds to that or starts to crack under that pressure. Really powerful film, gorgeously made, so I'm really excited to talk to the director about it tonight. But yeah, we have documentaries from all over the world. We have short films. We have a whole wide variety of short film programs that touch on a number of different subjects. We were really excited this year to get enough science fiction related shorts to put a whole program together. Every year it seems like we get one or two good ones. This year we have enough for an entire program. So that's Shorts Program 10, I believe. And it's just really fun to see what comes through and to have past filmmakers, people who have been here in the past, come back to the festival again with their new projects.
How do you settle on the theme?
Well, it all revolves around Heartland's mission. So our mission is to inspire audiences and filmmakers through the transformative power of film. And the way that plays out, is pretty apparent in our programming criteria. So we look for films that, they have to have transformative power, which is, it has to be a well-made film. It has to be engaging. It has to be sharply edited. It has to be strongly directed and well shot. Beyond that, though, it needs to be entertaining, but it has to do something more than just entertain. So it has to educate, it has to maybe inspire, or it could shift your perspective. So it all a lot of the films do a whole bunch of that in different ways. And that's really what we look for when we program. So you'll be engaged in the film as you watch it, you'll be entertained by it, and Paul's film really does that very well too. But you're going to learn something, you're going to be a little bit different, 90 minutes later when the film's done.
Paul, in terms of I guess I should ask, when you come to these festivals, because it sounds like you get to an awful lot of them, do you see other films, or is it like another day at the office for you? It's really I got to come in here. I know what I'm here. I'm here to to present my movie and to answer some questions, and then there's another town and another festival and another show.
I wish the answer to that was I had the time and luxury to see other films, but to be honest, I rarely get a chance to. There's we spent over 7 years, close to 8 years, working on this project, and we're very concerned that it gets seen mm-hmm. and have impact. So a lot of my time is spent helping to ensure impact, and that means being working around the clock. So most of the time when I'm not answering questions about this film, I'm working on its other showings all over the country. So I've had a couple of wonderful opportunities. When I was in D.C. at AFI Docs, I got to see The Bronx Obama, mm-hmm. which is a film about this Obama impersonator that comes from the Bronx. And I really enjoyed that film. And every once in a while, I get to see a film. But I regret to say that I won't see any of the great films here. And there are many, many great films here. And I really applaud a film festival that's mission is what Tim just described, because many of them fall into the trap, I think, of not showing films that inspire people. And it's kind of wonderful that a festival espouses that.
We are talking about the Heartland Film Festival here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Paul, you know, the subject of your film, which is really nothing less than saving the world's water supply, right? Which is a heavy, you know, is a heavy subject. It sounds to me that as a storyteller, part of what made the film work is that you found an interesting protagonist. I mean, at least an interesting guide through that. So tell me a little bit about Dean Kamen. What makes him so intriguing?
He says Dean Kamen, by the way.
Kamen? Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. Everything about Dean is intriguing. This is a human being who lives his life completely differently than most. He is obsessed with using his time on this earth to the betterment of mankind. So he only wears one outfit of clothing because that means he only has jeans and jean shirts in his closet. And we literally show his closet in the movie, and it is, I'm 100% denim. You've never seen a closet like this. It's 50 blue shirts and 50 pairs of blue pants. Because what that means is you go to the closet and you dress automatically. You don't even have to think about it. And this is true of when he goes to the White House. This is true of when he goes before the UN. He has a helicopter garage in his house because he's a pilot for both helicopters and jets, because he wants to go to Cleveland or Indianapolis from Manchester, New Hampshire, like I might drive to Venice Beach in California. He's that busy and he's that concerned about saving time. He's probably never cooked anything in his life. He never goes to a grocery store. This is a guy who wants to save the world and spends all his waking hours devoted to making prosthetic arms for people coming back from wars missing a limb, you know, trying to solve the world's water crisis in small remote villages all over the world. He is provocative and funny. And just to give you an example, the joy of making a documentary of the accidents, the things you didn't expect, you try as a director to script things, but it's the things you didn't expect. And here's an example, and it's in the movie. We just wanted to shoot his earlier version of the slingshot machine, and he showed us one of the earlier prototypes, and it was $1 million machine. It was made by hand. It had parts in it that took forever to construct. So I said, could you just lift the cover off and look at it and maybe talk to your associate, Jim? And he said, now you're not using the sound, right? I said, no, I just want the B-roll picture. So they lift off the cover and they fall into an Abbott and Costello routine about, this is made entirely out of expensium. And this piece over here is made entirely out of unobtainium. This piece over here demonstrates I can't make two of them. And this is made entirely out of unreliabilium. And that was the dialogue. And I'm listening to it.
And you don't want me to use sound.
I'm thinking, I am so using that sound. Yeah. This is a guy who talks about making $1 million machine out of unreliabilium. That's an example of Dean's. And he talks at one point. He said, "People, I wanted to make it rugged, so I made a. You know, people said, 'What? It looks like the bedliner of a Chevy truck. What is it made out of? It's actually made out of the bedliner of a Chevy truck.'" I mean, he made the cover of this machine out of the bedliner of a Chevy truck because he wanted it rugged.
I think we've got a clip that captures some of the sense of this, and this is where, you know, when he's talking about scientists and how he sort of wants to elevate their role in the world, right?
He's very concerned about the role of science and technology in our culture.
Yeah. So if we could play that real quickly.
One morning, I walked into the little science center, and I noticed that almost every kid in the place was wearing a sweatshirt or a jersey that was about, you know, the Patriots or the Bruins. And I happened to stop and say to one of them wearing one of these jerseys, "Can you tell me the name of a famous living engineer?"
Nobody can.
You know, we got to fix that. And I just went around to every kid and say, "Could you tell me the name of some role model, scientist, engineer, inventor?" And not a single one could. One of the adults finally said to me, "Einstein, but I think he's dead." There's nothing wrong with having great superheroes from the world of sports and entertainment and the arts, but you'd think there'd be room for a few people that contribute to society by curing disease or creating cell phone technology. Or you just look at what we take for granted, and nobody has any idea how it got here.
That was a clip from the movie Slingshot, whose director Paul Lazarus is with us, and that was inventor Dean Kamen talking really about somewhat our inverted value system here in the world. I mean, how did you get him to do that, Paul?
Well, he's very vocal about that particular subject, and he really is the poster child for science and technology appreciation. He's gone way out of his way to change the culture. He founded FIRST Robotics in 25 years ago. Started 22 high schools in New Hampshire. It's now in 50 states, 60 countries, and affects 400,000 kids. This is a guy who does not do things by half. So when he says he's out to change the culture, there's very few people who would say the line, "So I decided to change the culture of the United States," where you would take them seriously. When Dean Kamen says, "I decided to change the culture of the United States," you actually have to pay attention.
What was it like to interview? I mean, it sounds to me, having done a fair amount of interviewing, obviously, in my life, you've got different kinds of folks who sit down for that, some who are glad to be part of the process. With a guy that smart, that determined, that forceful, and I suspect also that used to running things, you know, one of the first rules of interviewing is, as the interviewer, you're supposed to be in charge. You're the one who asks the questions. What was that like?
You do not run Dean Kamen. Dean Kamen runs you. You're absolutely right. And I think the fun for me was how to understand that and still get the necessary items to make a movie. I mean, I could tell you countless stories. I wanted him to brush his teeth on camera. Now, the reason I wanted him to do that is because I wanted to see him use water like everybody does. We get up in the morning. Most of us brush our teeth. I wanted to just have him. And literally, I had to listen to, "Oh, sure, Paul, 20 million people want me to see me brush my teeth." And I said, "Well, actually, they do." And a lot of times I just had to come back at him. And you don't direct Dean Kamen. He actually decided that we didn't even need the normal clapper. You know, when you have three cameras running simultaneously, you need a clapper device to sound sync them. And you usually use a little device called the clapper, and the assistant camera person runs up and does the clapper. Well, Dean saw this in the beginning of our time, and he said, "What's that for?" And we explained to him, "It's for sync sign." Well, he said, "Well, I can do that. I can just clap my hands, right?" So from then on, Dean would do the clap.
Okay.
And so I have 75 instances of Dean Kamen doing the clapper, but he would always tell a joke. I ended up using it in the movie because it's both a leitmotif and a measure of the man's desire to be in control. So it's both. Almost everything about Dean has many sides to it. He's not simple. He's not obvious. He's not stupid. He's really, really smart.
Obviously not stupid. Yeah.
He's really, really smart. So you have to entertain the inquisitive and childlike mind of Dean Kamen and also try to direct him. It was impossible.
Was there any point in the film where your narrative ran counter to his. Because, you know, when you do like a magazine profile or whatever, if you really do your job right, the subject is at best ambivalent about the result.
many times. Yeah. Many times. And we would have discussions about it, and I would explain the purpose, and usually he would understand. But many times, particularly about his partners, not himself. But he ended up partnering with Coca-Cola. And I, as a filmmaker, had a responsibility to be as truthful about this mega corporation as I could. And I included some not-so-flattering aspects about Coca-Cola. But that's Dean's partner. Mm-hmm. But I knew it was the film must be truthful. And I think any subject of any film is going to come back to the filmmaker. I mean, I've heard stories even of people like James Taylor mm-hmm. or his estate not wanting to ever reveal the fact that he was a heroin addict at one point. Mm-hmm. Human beings we're not always pretty. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing a portrait of someone, it's not always pretty. But if they're smart, like Dean Kamen is, mm-hmm. they usually realize that you're just after the truth, not after necessarily inflicting damage. You're just trying to tell the truth.
We are talking about the Heartland Film Festival here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz. Call us at 866-476-3881. You also can find us on Facebook at No Limits, WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Phil did. And find us on Twitter at WFYI. And Phil gives a shout-out here to the festival itself, says, just wanted to say what a great festival Heartland is. Tim, it's got to feel good to hear.
That is very kind. We put a lot of work into it. It takes us, 4 or 5 months just to narrow down the films that we get to the ones that we show at the festival. We had over 1,600 submissions this year, representing 85 different countries. So just getting that down to 135 and then working on getting 150 filmmakers here takes a lot of time, a lot of efforts. It's really validating to hear people respond to that in a positive way.
We also got a caller who didn't want to go on the air but wanted some very direct information. It says, really enjoying the conversation and hearing about the film, and wants to know again where it is showing and how to access it and more basic info, how much it might cost, all of that sort of
stuff.
Sure.
Yeah, so the next screening.
So it looks like you've got someone coming, Paul.
Great.
The next screening's tonight at 6:15 p.m. at the AMC Traders Point Showplace 12 Theater on the northwest side of Indianapolis. You can buy tickets online at heartlandfilmfestival.org. Tickets online or by phone are $9. They're $11 at the door. You can just walk into the AMC theaters, and we have our own box office set up. You can buy tickets for any Heartland Film Festival film there. So the film will be at AMC Traders Point tonight at 6:15, and then again Saturday at 3 p.m. also at the Traders Point Theater.
And how many people overall with the film festival, how many people generally attend?
Last year we had record attendance of about 24,000 over the 10 days. So that's a lot of, we have some crazy people that we love that so go see 40 movies over 10 days, and that's fantastic. And we have some people that come see a single movie, and we love having them all there.
And are you on track this year?
Yeah, we're on pace this year, trying to keep it up for the last few days.
Okay. And what are there other than Slingshot, are there big film events that are still out? What do you close the festival with?
Yeah, our closing night, I think we still have a few tickets left for our closing night event. It's a French film called Belle and Sebastian, and I know there's a band by the same name, and actually the band took their name from the 1960s French TV series that this film is based around. So it's a really, we opened the festival with Jason Reitman's new film Men, Women, and Children, which was a bit of a tougher look at some of the issues hitting society relating to technology and how we connect with each other. Our closing night film is a little bit on the lighter side, still deals with some tough subjects, but it's about a little boy in the French Alps during World War II and his friend that he finds, a giant sheepdog named Belle that he befriends that the farmers think are, killing all the sheep. So gorgeously shot film. We're having a couple of the filmmakers over from France for it, 7 o'clock at the Indianapolis Museum of Art.
We are talking about the Heartland Film Festival here on No Limits. My guests are Tim Irwin of Heartland and director Paul Lazarus, whose film Slingshot is being shown as part of the festival. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the Heartland Film Festival on No Limits today. My guests are Heartland Artistic Director Tim Irwin and director Paul Lazarus, whose film Slingshot, which is about Segway inventor Dean Kamen's life-saving water filtration invention, is being shown as part of this year's festival. Well, Tim, you obviously started with kind of a big bang with all of, you know, with Robert Downey Jr. and all of that. Normally, Heartland, while it is a very popular festival, doesn't get that sort of huge media rush. What was it like? I mean, were you guys prepared to deal with it, or?
Yeah, we were prepared to deal with it, and it's interesting. We always try to balance what we do with the bigger studios, and because our focus is really on the independent films mm-hmm. and filmmakers. So our grand prizes that we gave out last Saturday at our award ceremony, they don't go to Warner Brothers or Robert Downey Jr. They go to documentarian filmmakers. They go to narrative filmmakers from all over the world. So what we have to balance is, you know, the right amount of spotlight on that comes just naturally because of some of the bigger stars in Hollywood whenever we get the chance to embrace them. Especially when they make really strong films like The Judge, which was a recipient of our Truly Moving Picture Award. So we try to balance that with and hope that brings more awareness to the independent films that we highlight throughout the entire 10 days. But yeah, whenever we get the chance to host Hollywood in Indianapolis, we jump at it.
How do you go about selecting the films? Process, I think you said there are 135 films this year, right?
Yeah, we have 135 that we've selected, so that includes probably 70 or 80 short films, and then the rest are feature-length films. I ruin about 50 people's lives for 4 months. That's kind of how we select the films.
Well, and how many submissions do you get?
So this year we broke our submissions record, had 1,634, and then I have about 50 volunteer screeners that help us out from we really start in about April and go through June, and they watch all of the submissions, provide online reviews for every single film. 3 people watch each film in its entirety up front. And then based on their feedback and the discussions that we have weekly meetings for the feature-length films. We kind of see which films rise to the top from that. And then I have second-level programmers and interns that help provide more feedback. And ultimately, I'll end up watching a whole bunch and then kind of make the final selections from there.
So it sounds like if you start out with 1,600 and you move down, there's about an 8% chance that
your
film is going to be chosen. That's got to feel pretty good, Paul, to know that you made it through that kind of a gauntlet.
It feels really good, and it's important to the life of a film. And when you put in 8 years on something, it feels really, really good.
Well, and that 8-year process, I mean, in some ways, what do you consider? 8 years is a significant slice of anyone's life. I mean, that's a big investment. What do you hope to see as a result of that? I mean, other than obviously a good movie, what kind of reaction are you hoping to provoke?
Well, I think it may sound a little grandiose, but I really, on this one, I've been directing for 30 plus years. And on this one, a decision was made to tackle a world challenge. You know, the world's water crisis is big.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's it was our goal. It's mm-hmm. our stated goal to help get this technology out into the world and, like I said before, and help inspire people about science and technology and adjust, I think, the Western view of looking at water, the developed world's view of looking at water, mostly taking it for granted. And the only way to do that is to get millions and millions of people to see the film. So our goal is to get a lot of eyeballs on this work and hopefully affect change and affect change in a very large way, in a social impact way. Create awareness about water, help get this machine out there in a big way, mm-hmm. help support the story of this evolution of this box. And I also like to think that it will inspire a lot of young people to get involved with science and technology.
How central is this crusade to Dean Kamen's life? I mean, you talk about all of the other things that he can do and does do. Is this the central driver for him, or is it just one of many projects?
It is one of many projects. He does a lot of things, but I can tell you assuredly tell you that when it comes to children and young people, it is paramount to Dean Kamen that they get excited and energized about potential careers in science and technology. If I think his favorite and most important cause is FIRST Robotics. And the reason he does that is he was hoping to reach a very large segment of our youth to say, bouncing a ball is cool. Mm-hmm. Spending a lot of time bouncing a ball is fine. But how about focusing on something like mechanical and electrical engineering where you can actually have a life?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the sense I'm trying to get here is, you know, most of us, it's enough to say, okay, in life, I'm just going to try to brighten the corner where I am, you know. His corner seems to expand to the entire globe. I mean, he really, it's a larger scale, and there's some determination. We've got another one of the clips from the film where he's talking about the difficulty of dealing with, you know, the whole nation structure and the United Nations. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, remember, this has been a 15-year-plus struggle for Dean Kamen of getting this machine out into the world. He's gone everywhere, and this clip a little bit sums up some of the trajectory of that journey.
Okay. Let's listen to it now.
I went to the United Nations and said, I've got this box. Let's figure out how to help get it out there. Their basic answer was, good for you. We're rooting for you. But we don't do that. We don't distribute products. We don't build sustainable microeconomic systems. We don't lend people money. We don't make entrepreneurs. That's not what we do. I was somewhat disappointed. I believe all of these global organizations want us to succeed, but it's a different way of thinking that we're delivering to them. Otherwise, they're going to a place that they haven't been before. And getting people to do that is very hard. Innovation is a very difficult, frustrating process.
How successful, that was a clip obviously from Slingshot, a film about the inventor Dean Kamen's campaign to save the world's water supply. How successful has he been in getting that box placed? I mean, obviously the work is not completed. The film wouldn't have needed to be done.
It's been a long, long, hard row to hoe. But he, in 2011, and that's actually where I got very seriously involved with the movie as well, he managed to persuade the Coca-Cola company to help with this box. In fact, what's interesting is I was in the theater last night to see the film, and there's these freestyle Coca-Cola machines, which you see everywhere. They're thin. Well, that's actually Dean Kamen. He invented that box, that other box. And Dean likes to say, I went to Coke and I said, I'll help you with your box. You help me with mine. And Muhtar Kent, the CEO of Coca-Cola, basically asked Dean to change Coke's entire soda fountain industry, which he did. But he did it consciously because he wanted Coca-Cola to help him with the slingshot. And Coca-Cola has turned around. And I'm not saying that one leads to the other exactly, but Coca-Cola has done trials with 5 machines in Ghana, which are in the film. Uh-huh. And those trials were extraordinarily successful. They've gone from those trials to putting about 100 machines in on three continents, in South America, South Africa, in Paraguay, in South America, and also Mexico. And according to a statement by Muhtar Kent at the Clinton Global Initiative in 2013, they are committed to placing 500 million liters of clean water into the world by 2015, by the end of 2015. This is an enormous amount of clean water, thousands and thousands and thousands of people. I want to see that happen. I think everybody wants to see that happen. I think Coca-Cola wants to see that happen, and nobody wants to see it happen more than Dean Kamen. So I think that's pretty successful, to answer your question. I think that it's well on its way to being a potential solution for many, many impoverished villages all over the world. So if this happens, this is one of the biggest healthcare projects that's ever been done by man.
I'm going to ask a simple question, but probably not an easy one, and that is, how important is money to this guy? I mean, for a lot of people, even, you know, plugging into Coca-Cola is sort of the end, but to me it sounds like that was just a means to get to his real end there. He said, okay, I'm going to figure out a way for you guys to make a lot of money as long as you help me save the world's water supply.
How important is money? You know, Dean Kamen retooled kidney dialysis in the 80s. Yeah. When you retool an entire form of healthcare, you make money.
Yeah.
You know, since then, he has a lot of real estate holdings. He's a wealthy guy. He'd be the first to tell you. He also likes to say, I take a lot out, but I put a lot back.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to be a poor man, but I don't think that's his focus. I think his focus is getting clean water to people. And he luckily has the means to spend every waking second. But the thing is, most people, when they have a lot of money, they get yachts and they take time off and they lie on beaches, whatever they do. Dean calls vacation the V word. Mm-hmm. His attitude is, if I'm not working, I'm not living. And if I'm not solving a big problem, what am I doing? I can genuinely say, because I've been around this guy for a long time, he spends every waking second trying to further these visions, and he really believes in them, and he really cares, and he really wants them to succeed. So he's not, again, we started off, he's just not a typical human being.
We are talking about the Heartland Film Festival here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Aaron did and reach out to us on Twitter at WFYI. And Aaron just wanted to say, loved Men, Women, and Children. We loved it. At first, you don't emotionally connect, but by the end, you suddenly realize you do. Is that one of the goals of the film festival, is to surprise people?
Yeah, that is. And I think, you know, we have such a wide variety of films. Some of them you can take your whole family to, and you'll just have a good, easy time. Some of the films, like our opening night film, Men, Women, and Children, is really one that's going to cause you to kind of reevaluate your life a little bit and think about the relationships that you're having with people around you and how you interact with them and the meaning of that connection. And that's really what we want people to do, is have larger discussions after they see these films. I know that's what Paul wants after people see his film. That's kind of what we want everyone to do after they see any of the films that we program.
Well, and it gets to somewhat, I guess I'm going to ask, the nature of what a film festival is. I mean, a movie like The Judge with Robert Downey Jr. and Robert Duvall in it really isn't going to struggle to find an audience, at least not an opening audience. But a film like Paul's, there's a little more work in trying to get it in front of eyeballs. Is that part of the challenge, really, for Heartland, is to get people to see movies that they otherwise might not?
That is a big part of it. And I think, you know, having Robert Downey Jr. here makes people's ears prick up and say, hey, what is he here for? Mm-hmm. Oh, the Heartland Film Festival. Oh, what are they doing next week? Oh, well, you have, 135 films that they can come see and should come see. And I think one of the reasons that festivals still exist and why they thrive is that, you can watch more films than ever before on your couch with your set-top box, your Blu-ray player, streaming Netflix, whatever. But that's not the same experience that you get sitting with 150 other people in a movie theater having a larger conversation about a film. You don't get to have the filmmaker in your living room afterward talking to you about, you know, how long they spent on the film, what it means to them to finally be able to share it with audiences. That passion doesn't come through the same way in Netflix that it does at a film festival and at the Heartland Film Festival.
Paul, what was the most difficult thing about making your movie?
Raising the money,
yeah,
was tough. Keeping going after year after year after year. I've often said that I probably wanted to quit this project more than anything I've ever taken on in my life. And at some point, it switched over to I became afraid of not finishing it, because I thought, how deep a regret could I get into if I didn't finish this project after already putting in 4 years on it? And it was challenging on every level.
It sounds a little, I used to run marathons. It sounds like the psychology of that. It's much easier to quit at mile two than it is at mile 24 for just that reason. You've invested so much in it. But what were you afraid of? When you say, I was afraid of not finishing it, what made you afraid that you wouldn't be able to finish it?
Imagine you put a large chunk of your life into a movie that has the potential to awaken people to a very large problem and has the potential to help disseminate a life-saving technology and has the potential to inspire young children to pursue worthwhile careers in science and technology. Imagine putting a lot of time into that and then quitting.
Oh.
That's what I was afraid
did you,
of.
Did you ever think about quitting? Or
all the time.
All the time? What prompted you to want to think
well,
about quitting?
Well, after the 14th day of 20-hour workdays in a row and after the 50th rejection from somebody who doesn't want to give you any money when you need it and after the endless kinds of challenges. You know, and you know what? Making a movie, it's a glorious proposition, but it's also tough work. And there's a lot of stuff that makes you want to quit. And luckily I didn't. I'm very pleased and proud of the fact that I didn't, but I did think about it a lot.
I've gotten a tweet from a listener named Gabe who says he has a favorite festival memory. In past years, I hung out with actor Doug Jones at a screening of The Butterfly Circus. That's my favorite festival memory. And then we've gotten a message from a listener named Gary via Facebook. Says, it's actually a question. Does not the societal construct now require a money component to a successful completion of an idea? This includes a movie, et cetera. And I think to some degree, Paul, you just spoke to that, that raising the money was the most difficult part of this.
Yeah, I mean, of course money's involved, and you don't want to keep asking people to volunteer to help you. It's one thing to ask it of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to ask 20 people that are involved in going to Ghana to shoot to work for free. So you have to pay people. So where did you get the money?
Yeah. And where did the money come from?
A lot of times my own pocket.
Oh, so, and, okay.
Or lovely people who have helped me by writing a tax-deductible donation.
Okay, to you're set up as a 501c3 as well. Well, real quickly, Tim, could you talk about some of the films that are still out there that people can see? And then obviously I'm assuming there's a URL where they can go to get more information.
Yeah, you can find out everything at heartlandfilmfestival.org. We have the entire schedule up there. You can buy tickets online. You know, I think a couple of the key events coming up, we have a short film workshop actually on Saturday at 2:15 p.m. In partnership with the Weinstein Company and Lexa Short Films, which is a really interesting new funding model and distribution model for the short film form of art. And it's really interesting. It'll be really interesting to hear what the directors have to say. We're showing two shorts, having the directors in for each of them during that program. And then not long after that, you know, we have our closing night event, Belle and Sebastian, at the Indianapolis Museum of Art at 7 o'clock. We'll also be announcing our Audience Choice Award winners in each category, as well as the best premiere winners in the narrative feature and documentary feature categories. So the best films that had their start here.
And people can see Slingshot tonight at Traders Point at 6:15, right?
Correct.
Tim Irwin and Paul Lazarus, I'd like to thank both of you for being with us. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Thanks so
much. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.